Hi, everyone. Tamarack here. And this is The Diamond Path, a weekly show that takes a look at life's different situations, filtered through a Buddhist perspective. Tonight, our discussion, our little talk, will be actually getting to know each other a bit. I wish I could meet everyone out there listening personally. I'm a personable kind of guy. And I know many of us who are listening to radio kind of wish after a while they knew a little bit more about who it was on the other end of that speaker. So I'm going to actually talk a little bit about myself tonight, which I don't usually like to do, but let's just call it getting to know each other a little. And it's not going to be full of details like who my favorite pet was or what kind of sports I had in school. It'll actually be, there'll be spiritual threads running through it, something I think that might be a little interesting. Anyway, let's get started. I've been married to my wife, Jude, for 32 years. I've got two beautiful and spiritual children, Malika and Jacob, and two grandchildren, Nova and Zenith. I just turned 60 a couple months ago. So far, it's been the best years of my life. They just seem to get better. I've been a landscaper for over 25 years, specializing in stone structures and structures in the garden, and about 10 or 15 years ago I got involved in some rustic stuff, and now I'm a rustic fine furniture maker, and I work with rustic architecture and details and things like that in the garden. I've had an interesting little spiritual journey. I'm going to read a list of the religions and belief systems I invested in throughout my life in order. I was a Lutheran, an atheist, a Catholic, an agnostic, New Age, studied physics for 20 years, hold the math, a Hindu, and ultimately a Buddhist. So anyway, that's actually not as confusing or varied as it may sound. I was born a Lutheran, Swedish stock, spent a few years in Brooklyn, the Bay Ridge area, and then moved to my dad's hometown in Lansing, Michigan. So, of course, my Lutheranism was Sunday school and not much more. And then as I grew older and my father made his views plain on the subject, he was an atheist, I got to be pretty much of a doubter. And then, of course, when I got into college, early college, and realized I knew it all, I was an avowed atheist. Found a lovely lady who happened to be Catholic, went in the army, and more to make, I think, to please her than anything, but not without some strong spiritual commitment, I became a Catholic. I was a very good Catholic. I was able to really invest myself in the ritual, things that I wouldn't have done 5 months earlier if you paid me. So it was a pretty interesting ride. But it only lasted about 12 months, and I let that fall away as I did my relationship with the girl who I got the Dear John letter from. She wound up marrying my best friend. After that, after the Army, I got out, and of course it was the 60s, which were the 70s for me. And there was all the 60s and 70s sensibilities, the spiritual, the New Age, the flights of fancy in every direction, the war, the working together for common causes, and, of course, drugs. So I found myself looking at the world anew. It was definitely a mind-bending period for me. And it was there, I think, I started to see a little beyond the everyday, a little beyond the totally logical, kind of tweaked my interest, but it really didn't develop very far, and for the next many, many years, like I said, about 20, I was pretty well convinced I could find out more about life studying physics, the grand with the planets and galaxies and how they moved, and all the way down to the subatomic particles. And believe me, there's a lot of answers there. There's a lot of metaphor, if you will, for parts of the spiritual path. I weave science quite a bit into a lot of these talks and at Monday nights at the Sangha, because there's so much about Buddhism that is cause and effect. But anyway, after about 20 years of that, and I was still pretty much... That's where I was. I was still reading physics. And as things happened, my wife got breast cancer. Turned out to be a mild case. It was taken care of, and there's been no return. It's been like 7, 8 years now. But of course, anytime there's even a threat of mortality, however vague, one tends to re-examine where one's going, and both of us did, and I decided to pick up a spiritual book for the first time in many years. And I happened to pick up Deepak Chopra's 7 Spiritual Laws of Success. Now, this is a very tiny little book. It is a small book, and it's a very short book. And I believe it has 7 chapters, one of which is named Karma. I don't even remember it that well now. But that book was quite an awakening for me. And I do mean that in the sense that we talk about it. We all go through awakenings in our life. I'd had one 35 years earlier, and this is not an advocation of their use, but it happened to be during a period of drugs. And I saw things there that were repeated in the kind of mindset that developed after reading the 7 Spiritual Laws. Just a whole new view on the way life works. So before I explored any further, I gave Deepak about 6 more tries. I think it was another 6 books. He's an amazing man, an amazing writer, an amazing speaker. And I found myself basically embracing Hinduism, which is what his area is. And I could accept almost all of it. There was still something at the end of the passage of going from a conflicted state to a non-conflicted state to emerging with the all, which the Hindus call God. And yet this God, still a creator, still looked at as a creator, this God had no characteristics. It was undefined, nondescript, without form, without essence. And this is what ultimately the souls that individuals would merge with. So the soul and the God bit was something I was kind of temporarily accepting on faith, because the rest of it sounded very good. It was kind of where I wanted to be, but I wasn't quite sure. And then one night, a good friend mentioned to me, just kind of offhand in some conversation, that, there is no God in Buddhism. And that hit me rather strongly. I had never read a thing about Buddhism up till then, never even in the 60s. Completely new to it. And it was just a matter of going to a couple of meetings, reading a couple of books, and that was it. I've been going to this local sangha for now a little over 5 years. And I guess about 3 years into it, or 2 years into it, it was evident that our beloved priest, Jack Fitterer, was leaving, and that someone had to replace him. I did not ever consider doing that, but nobody else seemed to rise, and I do have a bent for teaching, and I've decided then that maybe I would try this. And that set me on a path of taking these summer training periods in Canaan, New York, the Institute for Tendai in America that ordains. And that was, as we call it, Buddhist boot camp. Very tough stuff. But in any case, that's the process that brought me to where I am now, which is talking to you wonderful people over the radio. Something I never thought I would do. And why didn't I think I would do it? I'd given it a brief thought at one point. Well, the answer to that question, and the answer to many questions in my life, and in fact, probably the greatest teacher that I've ever had in my entire life has been fear. I started out absolutely unable to deal with life out of the home. It stayed with me till high school. I was just morbidly afraid of just about everything outside the home. And then, of course, I kind of snapped out of it and grew up slowly. But the common thread throughout my whole life, even now, is that when I think of doing something, when I think about It's more about doing something. It's more about my abilities. When I start thinking, can I do this? Fear is the first thing that raises its head. It sits there and commands my attention. And I look at it, and I am afraid. I was afraid to speak in front of the Sangha. I was afraid to, be on the radio. I've always been afraid to talking in any group any bigger than like 3 people or 4 people. I just get very nervous. That all comes back from high school when I would actually take an E in the class before I would get up and give a speech. See, we all come from who we were. We are here now because of what the environment offered us and how we interpreted it for our whole lives. That's who we are now. We're this pattern that is now, I wouldn't say gelled, because it never stops moving. We are our past. We are here because cause and effect. So the causes and effects that sent me here have been wondrous. I think I've lived a pretty interesting life, I'm happy to say, and it's just getting better. But there was a lot of fear throughout it. And every time you see a fear of your own, recognize it. Don't be afraid of it. Don't be afraid of the fear, because that fear is that nebulous concept, a future tense verb. It's something that just might happen, and it might not. You never know. So, of course, rationally, why bother being afraid? You don't know how it's going to happen, and if you do your best, if you pay attention to why you're doing your best, it'll all work out. But dropping that fear, dropping the pain that teacher brings to us every day. So when I thought of having any kind of public voice, there was a lot of that teacher out there telling me that I couldn't do it. And I don't want to say I was this wonderful warrior that just smashed his way through and triumphed. It's taken a long time. And it's working on many different levels. But as I happen to mention this to other people, we all have it. Virtually everybody I've talked to about my fears say, well, yeah, if you look at it that way, I guess fear's been, if not my biggest teacher, one of my biggest problems. Fear just seems to be prevalent in the human condition. And fear in Buddhism is not even looked at as a separate item. It is part of desire. I have mentioned this before, but it's good to be reminded. What is a fear? It's a fear of not getting something that you want, or a fear of getting something that you don't want. So that is a desire, or an aversion. Aversion and desire are the same thing. Either you desire to have it, or you desire not to have it. So either way, that's a desire. And a fear is a desire to have it your way, a desire to avoid suffering, which of course is what life is all about. So as we look back on our lives, it's quite a story. Everybody could write a book about their lives. Maybe they don't have the skill to really form the words so other people could understand it. But if somehow we could read their minds, read their feelings, read their impressions and the growth that's happened to them over the years, it's a phenomenal story for most of us, I think. What we thought we knew then, what we know now, how good we thought we were then, how good we know we are now, it's such an interesting process. It's unique to no one. Of course, there's a lot of sad stories of people who have let the past suggest certain ends, certain traits, certain habits, certain desires, and we wind up in traps. I mean, if you ask the vast number of people that you know, are you happy, I think most of them would say, yeah, in this country, they're probably doing okay anyway. Maybe not full of joy, but not so terribly hurting either. And yet there's others that would certainly describe a life of pain, maybe even of a hell. So as we look at each other's lives and we realize what threads that we've drawn together to create who we are now, if we look back, and study the years. Or more importantly, if we look right now and study ourselves right now. I mean, we all have baggage. We all have wonderful stories. We all have things that have made us who we are. We know that. It's fun to kind of glance back and see where we've been. And I love sharing that with other people. When I talk to someone or meet them for the first time, I practically interview them. It's just my way. I just like to know everything about them. But it's who you are right now and how you operate right now and how you understand yourself right now. That's really important. The past has already happened. Nice to reflect on, but not much you can do about it. And of course, the future is not yet here, and there's not much you could do about it, save for some planning that inevitably changes will come up and you'll have to replan, so it's not a fixed thing. But the one thing that we have complete control of right now is the moment. I'm a craftsman. I make rustic furniture. I have patience when it comes to this sort of thing, so I spent hours stripping wood, fitting it well, trying to figure out how to make it fit organically with no spaces and all that. And it's craftsmanship. I've learned it over the years. And what is craftsmanship? It's mindfulness. If you follow what you're doing step by step, and you take the time, you use your patience to allow yourself to slow down enough to really pay attention, you're not thinking about something else, then craftsmanship can be developed. Anybody who does a job, either with their hands or with their minds, if they have to be there every moment and pay attention, that develops mindfulness. So this mindfulness and this craftsmanship and this paying attention is something we could all do, and the more we do it, the better we get. And the better we get, the more mindful we become. And the ramifications from that are really pretty interesting. So paying attention to the moment. What you're doing. Where you are in the world. The people that you interact with. Be mindful of people that we interact with. What are they feeling? How are they reacting to things that we're saying? Are we sensitive to them? And then, of course, mindfulness of one's body, how it works, where it hurts, what it can do, what it can't do. Just mindfulness of its existence. If we sit in meditation, there are meditations, there's many meditations, but one specifically where we sit and we just put our minds in different parts of our body, recognizing the structure of our spine, the strength of our spine, the muscles in our legs, the feelings in our knees, just to be aware of the body, be mindful of the body. Then there's mindfulness of emotions. You want to know who you are now and forget about who you were then? Take a look at your emotions. How do we react to things when things go wrong? How do we relate to people who push our buttons? Why do we act the way we do? And even if you don't have an answer, the more you look at it, at least you'll become familiar with it. Anything familiar becomes less fearful. You're less ignorant of it. The more knowledge you have about anything that goes inside you, goes on inside you, is a mindful action. So the emotions, a very important part of mindfulness. And then be mindful of awareness itself, our consciousness as it is now. That's who we were then. Wow, quite a nerd, quite a geek, whatever, a little macho. I grew out of that. Then I was a young mother, young father, football star, who knows? But that's all been a path. We're here now. And that whole path has created this whole universe inside our head, which we call consciousness. It's our awareness of the world. It's this supercomputer of everything that we're about. It's the total ball of who we are, our whole consciousness. So this is the end product so far in this life of me. And as you're listening, your whole life, its sole product is who you are right now. And this is repeated the next day after this show was repeated the day after we first broadcasted. So if you listen to it the second day, and I'm saying your whole life has culminated into the consciousness that you are right now. A day later, it's different. You've had 24 hours of new input. So our whole life has this river quality to it. Always us, ever changing, picking up things along the way, dropping things off along the way, wanting things very badly 1 year, could care less about it a couple years later. Life is so changing, and the consciousness too is changing just like that. Every day, we're a little bit different than we were yesterday. Every week, every month, we may still react to many of the same buttons. But not only physically have we changed, our consciousness has been tweaked over and over again with everybody we meet and with any phenomena that comes upon us that's either negative or positive. Neutral tends to just flow by. But if we notice something and we like it, we embrace it, that changes us a little bit. That puts a few more bits into our consciousness. Same with a negative something, a person, place, or thing, a bad day. That changes us just a little bit and imprints on our consciousness. So our consciousness is this evolving thing that we will talk much more about next week, as it were. But for now, let's just think of it as I said earlier, we're very much like a river, always moving, ever changing, still a river. Well, that's about it, I think, for today. Nice talking to you. I hope this gives a little bit of who I am as you listen and have some idea perhaps of where I'm coming from a little bit. Just wish I could share more of your lives with me, but this is kind of a one-way thing here. Feel free to tell me a little bit about your life if you want to log on to our Blogspot. It's diamondpath.blogspot.com, and there's room there for comments. Love to hear from you. Let me know who's listening. So until next week, peace.